The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance.
BTL, coming at you.
Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Monday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew, man, I'm glad to be home.
We're both world travelers. We both got back into
the great state of Oklahoma
today from different portions of the country. Me from Arkansas, where I was covering the FLW Cup that inevitably we knew Brian Thrift was going to win one. And he won it by 5 pounds, 1 ounce, and it might as well have been 50 pounds, yeah. 1 ounce. It was not as close as it appeared, and we'll get into why and how and what. And then you were on the East Coast,
yes,
on a fishery that was just as stingy as Lake Hamilton.
12 pounds, man.
What river?
12 pounds.
The Delaware yeah. River. And you were out there for
the Ike Foundation, and they raised a ton of money. I think this is either the third or fourth, maybe even the fifth year that they've done it. And outstanding job by Becky and Mike Iaconelli raising money for kids in the inner cities. And it was tough, man. The tide schedule, that's what everybody was talking about before the tournament began, when we had the little get-together on Friday night where they did Ike Live. Live from the, I believe it was the Embassy Suite. No, it was the Crown Plaza Hotel, the sports bar that was there. And everybody was talking about the tides, bad timing. They had about an hour window, and that was it toward the end of the day. So it was tough.
Now, they had a fancy dinner there. What was it, a poker?
Or? Poker night.
Poker night?
No.
Casino night.
Casino night. That's what it was called.
Now, did you have to get dressed up, or did you go with the Nike polo?
No, I went with the Nike polo. I didn't know it was a dress-up thing.
Cargo shorts?
No, I don't wear cargo shorts. I don't, man. They're just regular khaki shorts.
But you were there
anyway,
kind of behind the scenes to make sure everything went well, yeah, with the live stream and all that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but I ended up going and met some really cool people that donated quite a bit of money and time, and the staff that Becky has, unbelievable, man. Those people that she has working, this is not just a one event thing either. And they're working the entire season building up and really raising a ton of money for the Ike Foundation. And then after it was done, guess what Mike did?
What'd Mike do?
He took off north about 2.5 hours for Vegas's tournament.
And Vegas did not have a good tournament, but won Angler of the Year for his youth club.
Yeah.
And now Mike is headed to Red Crest.
That is, well, he leaves on Friday. Yeah. So a action-packed week, as always, for Mike. And, you know, what's great about Mike, folks, and I've said this before, there'll be 20 people lined up, and he'll be dead tired. And he makes sure that he signs those autographs to that last person in line. And if there was 50 people there, if there was 100 people there, he would stay, he would sign autographs, and he would take care of his fans. And greatly, greatly appreciate the insight, kind of a behind-the-scenes look at what goes on with the Ike Foundation. So had a great 3 days up there and saw a bunch of stuff, man. This is weird, okay? I was staying in what they call the barn, and it's not a barn.
At Ike's house.
It is a set of rooms, and they're actually moving the studio for Ike Live to the barn. But once again, it's not a barn. It is really, really, really
like
nice.
Like a guest house.
And they were gone. Everybody was gone. I was the only one there. And I just kind of sat there, and then I saw all the stuff that his truck was there, his boat, mm-hmm, was there inside the barn, all of his tackle, and we've done in the house with Ike many, many years ago. But I just kind of stood there and thought, this is pretty cool to get to see the tools once again of the trade. I've been around them forever, but just to stand there and see everything that is involved when it really comes down to just one cast after another. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
You see, there is an enormous amount of stuff
that goes into
going
fishing.
Yeah. And it just kind of hit me. And that never really hit me before. All the years that I've been around this game, I just stood right by his boat and truck and looked at everything that he had inside that barn and thought, this is pretty cool. This is pretty incredible that just cast after cast is all based upon the preparation and everything that goes into him doing his occupation and doing what Ike does. So it was a pretty cool moment.
Oh, that's what you see a lot of those guys talk about, how mental the game is and how they're able to put the extra outside factors out of play when they're on the water. And a lot of the guys that you see who catch them have their stuff buttoned up.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of guys that are total gong shows who catch them too. Yeah. But there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes, and all you see is the boat idling out and fishing all the day and don't realize, the hundreds of hours that it goes into getting to the lake and that point to where it's time to fish.
Just little bitty meticulous things that you don't really think of. Like he had have you ever seen those pieces of equipment that you use to tie flies?
Yeah. A vise?
Yeah, like a fly vise or something. He had a couple of those that were just sitting there. And you could see what he had been working on and trying to get ready for the Red Crest and stuff. So really, really, really cool. All right, the second thing I want to do, and then we're going to get into the cup, is a shout out to a guy by the name of Sean Douglas. All right, I was at the St. Louis airport. I went from Philly to St. Louis and then St. Louis to Oklahoma City. I was dead tired. And I was sitting there, I was kind of off by myself, and this dude named Sean Douglas walked up to me, and I could see him walking to me, and there were a couple of kids that were playing over there, and I thought he was going to get the kids to get them to chill out, because they were getting kind of loud, and it was kind of late. Anyway, he walked over to me, and he stuck out his hand, and he goes, "Hey, Mark, I just want to say, man, what you and Matt are doing is great, big fan of the show, look forward to what you guys have going on in the future." And I sat there and I talked to him for about 15, 20 minutes. Cool dude. He is an investment banker, of all things, there in St. Louis. And very, very cool dude. And once again, man, greatly, greatly appreciate all the fans that are watching and keeping track of what you mainly do. I mean, I'm not the social media guy. So he was very complimentary, Matthew, of your AFCO Bass Boot Camp stuff. Said it was awesome. So big shout out to Sean. And he was really cool. Offered to buy me a snack. I didn't want, I was wiped. I was absolutely
wiped.
Ran
into one of your old buddies who's here in Oklahoma.
Who was that?
Well, he sent some buzz baits in last year.
Oh, yeah. And couldn't find the guy. The guy that built the buzz baits.
Well, there's supposedly three buzz baits.
They're in there on the desk.
Well, I got to take one of those with me. One of them was meant for me.
Yeah.
So, before we get into the FLW Cup, I keep wanting to call it the Forest Wood Cup because that's what it's been for years. But now it's the FLW Cup.
Yeah. They did get
Forest. They did get Forest up there and did a really cool thing. They brought all of the people who worked for FLW out, and he got a standing ovation, and Nina Wood was there.
Yeah.
Woods was there too. Was, standing next to him.
I saw that. I watched that
it was really cool.
On the live coverage. Seemed like there were a number of people that became emotional during that feature of the final day.
Yeah, definitely. But anyway, Monday morning, feels like it's been a year since there's been an Elite Series tournament. Remember, there's still a whole season, a whole half season left on the Elite Series, Mark.
Right?
Three regular season events and then the Angler of the Year Championship on, I believe, St. Clair for the top 50 anglers out of the 75 that are competing this year. But it is day one of practice. They are back in action on the St. Lawrence River. Would you say more so than any other stop, regardless of what tour it is, when the guys go to the St. Lawrence River or Champlain, they will leave 3, 4, 5 days early and fish around before the practice starts?
Yeah, I would say absolutely.
I mean, you don't see anywhere else in the country, regardless of how long the drive is, where these guys are like you know, just messing around for 3 or 4 days.
It's a great place.
Yeah.
It is a great place. I talked about it when we went on vacation up there. And I would say a very high percentage of the guys go up there to just fish. Mm-hmm. It's the only time. They're not going to take a special trip up there. So it works out great. They get to do some fishing that they really had the opportunity to do. So, yeah, they take full advantage of it.
St. Lawrence River turning into the Beaver Lake of the Elite Series. They signed that 3-year contract with him. It's the 4th or 5th time it's been back there now.
Yeah.
A lot of different faces, new faces, a lot of new faces that catch them better, will catch them better. I predict, what, KVD had 90-something last time?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, what, 22 a day, 23?
It's a lot.
Do we hit 100 pounds of smallmouth for the first time ever, Mark?
Might.
You've got Chris Johnson. You've got Corey Johnson. You've got a healthy Jamie Hartman.
Yeah.
You have Cliff Perch. You have Chris Zaldane. You have a number of guys that are very... You have Chad Pipkins.
Plus what from some of the guys have told me, it's setting up perfect.
It's really good right now.
Yeah.
They keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger every single year.
Yeah.
We could see a Falcon Lake-esque tournament where
100 pounds.
20 pounds is fighting for the top 35.
Once again, every time they go up north, it doesn't matter. It's ounces. Mm-hmm. Ounces means money. You might as well put in S's with two lines through them.
But there is some separation on the St. Lawrence River, though, because there are a lot of 5 and 6s, and you can get ahead if, you know, everyone else is catching 4s. So,
yeah.
I mean, throw in Brock Mosley, who's done well there. Brandon Lester, he almost won there. There's about a dozen to 15 guys. Now, there's some rookies that are going to get up there and be like, you fish in this current? I've got a half ounce drop shot weight. I'm about an ounce and a half shy of what I need to get down to the bottom.
Yeah.
But that'll be interesting to see. There's some big implications for me in this, Mark.
Well,
some real big implications in this.
Yeah,
these next Elite Series
tournaments.
Your
fantasy stuff, right?
I mean, you had it one year where you had a chance to win it. I'm 25th overall in the nation.
Yeah, I think at one point I was 10th.
Yeah, you were way up there going into the last one. Mm-hmm. So I think my strategy up north, so you've got the St. Lawrence and Cayuga.
You going with the hammers?
Here's the deal. You always say, you know, if you don't win, you lose. But I'm going to play this long picture, kind of like I do fishing the Costas.
Yeah.
Typically up north, the statistics say that the guys who catch them up north always catch them up north.
Yeah.
What's the last regular season event? So we have 3 northern tournaments. We have Lake St. Clair, Cayuga, and the St. Lawrence River. Now, there's a rescheduled wild card in there. Where's that?
Yeah, Fort Gibson.
Fort Gibson. That's where I'm going to make the money. I'm going to maintain up north. High percentage guys, not take any risks. The guys who you know are going to catch them, we've caught them every time since the dawn of time in tournaments up there. Bide my time in these next 2 events and then go for the jugular at Gibson.
We'll see, man.
And then see if I can hang on.
Massive wild card
on
though.
Lake St. Clair. Matthew. That's what I'm saying. If you're going to make up your points, you're going to maintain your points. This is 2 maintenance fantasy fishing tournaments. This is getting really nerdy. We need to move on. And then, boom, Fort Gibson is where you make up the points. Probably most of the people who listen to us. If they're listening to BTL, they play fantasy fishing, Mark, let's be honest.
High percentage there. High percentage. All right. I'm just going to flat out ask you, dude, do they surpass the century mark? Yes or no?
No, but there is a chance that someone will going into the final day, but I think it's 3-4 pounds short.
All right. We'll see.
That's a lot. 25 a day?
It's a lot, man. It is a lot.
Yeah.
All right. I mentioned, when was it? 2-3 weeks ago that I was on vacation in New York. One of the most gorgeous places that I've been to was the lower end of Cayuga.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious to see back-to-back tournaments. Curious to see how they attack it. Weather definitely comes into play on those lakes. And I was really, really impressed. That was the first time that I'd been down on the lower end of Cayuga. Yeah, most of the time I've been in the
mid. All those Finger Lakes are unreal.
Yeah. It's just, it is an unbelievable place. All right, I want to tell everybody this. As a result of this week, we also have Red Crest coming up. And I received numerous emails from people saying, why the heck do you not have Jacob Wheeler on the show? Well, I had been working on it.
He's kind of busy.
He's very busy, very, very busy individual. And I finally got it worked out. So we have Jacob Wheeler booked for this Wednesday. He's going to be on, kind of talk about his season, and then obviously talk about Red Crest and what his thoughts are going into that event. And then on Tuesday, we're going to have another guy who I think is going to, and if I say this, it's not a cliche or anything. I think he's just going to be kind of under the radar at Red Crest. And I'm talking about Wesley Strader.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a solid year. And so many people just kind of think of him as, oh, yeah, he might do well. But I got this feeling. I went back. I kind of looked at his stats on the airplane when I was flying last night and thought, you know, this might be somebody that is going to surprise a lot of people out there, because I think people are weighing it so much on previous history that people have had on this body of water. Obviously, A-Mart and everybody else that has done well on this body of water. But I just think Strader's going to be one of those guys that might fly under the radar and really surprise a lot of people. So we're going to have Wesley on tomorrow, and he's going to once again talk about his season and talk about the Red Crest coming up. So
that's cool. If MLF came out with their format over the weekend too for Red Crest, which there had been rumors that it would involve a graphing calculator to figure out who was fishing. Apparently they got together, they kind of got that format dialed in on the eve of Red Crest, and it's you know, 30 guys that all fish 2 days, then after the 2 days they drop the bottom 10, you're out, thanks for coming out. Now they've got 20, then they seed them into two groups of 10, they have an elimination round, then the top five out of each of those 10 go to the final round.
Yeah,
it's pretty easy to follow.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
It's pretty easy to follow.
Yeah, what do you think if you're, you know, part of the group that gets bumped out? That's part, I don't know, of it, man. You don't catch them, but, you don't,
well, here's,
you don't
the
fish.
Thing. It's kind of weird with the seating. You would think with just 30 guys on that river that, well, they got to have the cameras in the boat. So what I'm assuming is they're going to have 10 cameras, right? So that allows for every Maybe. Single person. Well, yeah, they
yeah.
have to.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking was, you would think, I just assumed all 30 would fish, you know, every day, and then they'd
yeah.
cut.
Yeah.
But what I think this is allowing them to do, because this will be a big TV show, is every single angler then, you know, they'll have one in three will have a camera boat the first 2 days.
Yeah.
So pretty much, you know, if they rotate, two-thirds of the field will have one.
Yeah.
And then that allows the 10 cameras to be in for the semifinal round for every single angler, because they have two rounds with 10, and
yeah.
then the final's 10.
Yeah.
So the whole second half, every single guy will have a camera in the boat the entire time. So that's kind of cool. I like that aspect of it,
yeah.
as far as, you know, exposure for the anglers and being able to follow it along in the Red Crest. What's your gut say? And we'll get into FLW.
Yeah.
What's your gut say on Red Crest attendance this year? Because we've seen what the
no idea,
Elite
dude.
Series has done up in, I mean, remember they had the beer garden there?
Yeah.
You got guys getting kicked out for heckling the anglers. Eric Lopez is there going, hey, get this guy out. The guy's, yeah. you know, remember that guy sitting yeah. there going, if I had your boat, I'd be catching him too.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I really don't know.
I'm interested. I think they'll show up on that.
I have
one.
No idea.
They like bass fishing there.
They do. They do.
And craft beer.
They do
like their
beer,
activities.
Man. Yeah. So we'll see. I have no idea. I think that is the big unknown, is what the turnout will be like. And the other thing, too, and I mentioned in earlier shows, we're going to try and get Boyd on after the Red Crest and talk about just kind of his state of the union and his thoughts on everything with just the Dark Cup events remaining. I'm really curious when they're going to come out with their schedule.
They have the dates blocked out.
Do you have the dates?
I've seen the dates.
Really?
I don't think it's public.
Is it loaded up? I mean, is it front end loaded, or is it all over the year?
Yeah. I mean, it's front end loaded.
Is it very similar to this year?
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay. All right. Any indicator on when they'll have the sites selected?
No.
Did you get a vibe?
Did not.
Any inside
nope.
info on that?
Nope. I just got a calendar with the dates blocked out.
All right. Well, we'll see. All right. One of the funniest things, I was watching the weigh-in live, and we're going to get into the FLW stuff.
Watching what weigh-in?
The FLW weigh-in.
Okay.
After we take a break. But Austin Felix, little bitty dude.
No, he's not.
Who is the little bitty guy?
That's Dakota Hebert.
That's right. And then who's like the 6'9" dude?
Kyle Walters.
He is mammoth.
He's a big dude.
Big dude. And I know him and Thrift roomed together, and they battled for the Costa title in the Costa Championship when last year or whatever. But seeing those two up there on stage was I got a chuckle out of it.
I think it was.
The dude's like 6'9", 6'10".
Yeah, I think Jody White was telling me this. One of the guys who works for FLW pointed this out, and I didn't realize it. So he, Walters didn't fish the tour this year. He won the 2018 Costa Championship.
Right.
Didn't fish the tour this year. Fished one, I think he fished one Costa this year.
Yeah.
Then fished the Cup and finished second. So 60 grand that, like 80, 90 grand for the Costa Championship.
Yeah.
So he's fished two no entry events, has had no entry fees the entire year.
It's a good year.
And has booked over 150K.
It's a way to do it.
That's doing it right. He's averaging $75,000 a tournament, Mark.
It's the best way to do it. All right, we're going to come back. We've got a couple of videos, I think, at least one video. And we'll get your thoughts on what went down in Arkansas with the FLW Cup. Everybody stay tuned. It's Monday. We'll be right back.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with Live Sight Sonar. HDS Live. New from Lowrance.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
Avco has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know, how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's going to stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's going to keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from Avco.
The heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast-off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
Aaron Martins here. I'm going to be telling you about a new product by Sunline. It's Siglon PE x8. I've been using it almost extensively all year for my frogging, flipping, drop shotting, shaky heading, worming, jerk baiting. It's by far my favorite Sunline braid. I don't say this unless I think it's true, but honestly, it's the best braid in the market of any of the braids. Definitely check it out. It's a price point line, $14.95 for 165 yards, and that could last you a whole year, just one spool with using leader material. So again, it's Siglon PE x8. It's my favorite braid, and I think if you use it, it'll be your favorite braid too.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
The message is simple. Win. Coming in 2019, the Ducket Fishing Silverado. It's coming at you for $99.95. Check it out at DucketFishing.com. There is no gray area, just silver. Check it out. All right, we are back kicking off the week. A great week here on BTL. Going to have Wesley Strader on tomorrow and Jacob Wheeler on Wednesday. All right, man, let's get into time that you spent in Arkansas for the Cup. And no surprise to anybody, Brian Thrift gets it done, his first Cup victory. And what were your initial thoughts, Matthew?
The thing that stuck out to me about the win was in the press conference afterwards. He said everyone expected him to win a cup except him.
Really?
That he had some self-doubt as to whether or not he could get it done.
It's good.
What stopped working?
Oh, my cord over here got tangled up. Oh. As good as he is, he had some self-doubt.
He said he realized that everyone just thought he was eventually going to win but him. You know, every time I do articles or write or talk about it, I have to actually make a note that Thrift has not won the cup.
Yeah.
Because it seems like he's won one. You know, all the other guys with Dudley and Martin and John Cox and all those guys, it seems so. Did your mouse stop working too?
Yeah.
Here, you need a battery out of your mouse?
You got one over there?
Yeah, because my computer crashed, so I have no screen.
Okay.
So my mouse does not.
Well, I'm getting you hooked up, man. I got another one in the back office I'm going to bring out tonight.
Is that happy? You're banging the mouse on the table like you're just... I mean...
That usually fixes
things. Usually you reset or reboot before you start hitting it.
Now, let's see if it's... if that... Oh!
You got a light?
I got a light now. All right.
You back in action?
I'm back in action now.
Yeah, so this thing was 100% in his wheelhouse. It was set up for him. And the other thing he said was, you know, he's been in, what, seven top fives? I don't have the stats because, as we previously discussed, my computer's crashed.
Yeah.
But in the cup, he's been in the hunt. He said this was the first cup in 13 cups that he feels like he had a chance to win.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then he went out and won. And he did it in the most Thrift-like fashion possible. So typically, you have the guy who wins. What is he? The guy who wins is dialed in.
Yeah.
Think about your classics.
Yeah.
Think about your past cups. Think about a regular tour event. Think about any tournament. Very rarely do you see guys, quote unquote, junking it up that blow the thing away.
Yeah.
And that's what he did all 3 days. There were like 8 baits involved, 30 rods, 6 different patterns. He had one area where he caught like 7 out of his 15 fish. It was kind of like a deal, and they kind of came up schooling on the end of the third day. And then at the beginning of the third day, he caught a limit on top. But then you're mixing in, he said, 5 different crankbaits, like Texas rigs, top waters, moving, like pretty much everything, a drop shot, pretty much everything that underspin. I mean, it just keeps going. He went through his pattern, and I'm sitting in the back laughing, and he's like, I hope that's good enough. But I'm just laughing
like
at it. Like
a dozen different things.
So he said also in a press conference, and he talked about this afterwards, was it's important in the summer to fish everything. Shallow, mid-depth, and deep, because you can catch him at all. So what he did was he would bounce around between. He caught some on top, some in 5 to 6 foot, and some deeper than 12.
Yeah.
So he literally did everything all over the lake with all the different baits while everyone else is trying to rack their brain to put a pattern together. I mean, you talk, you know, Kyle Walters, Dakota Hebert, Jeremy Lawyer, Scott Martin. They all had really defined stuff in either a certain area of the lake, or they only fished brush piles, or they only fished a big worm, or they only threw a topwater.
Yeah.
Thrift's doing it all, and he beats him by 5 pounds, which on a fishery, like the way it was fishing, did not even feel close at any point.
Let me ask you this. A number of guys mentioned they were going dam to dam.
Right. Well, it's 7,000 acres.
I know. Dam to dam. Is that what Thrift did? Did he do a lot of running around?
No. I mean, yeah, but not. He didn't go. So Dakota Hebert and Scott Martin and Felix was up there a little bit too. So the crazy thing about Hamilton, and if you watch any of this, you know, but you know, there's kind of the lower end that's like super kind of developed. It's a little flatter. The docks are really shallower. It's not as rocky. There's a ton of seawalls. It's kind of the George Cochran area from 2005.
Right, right.
That was where everyone kind of expected it to go down. And the Midlake region is very Ozarky. Lots of big ski boats, tubers. You've got the bridges. You've got kind of more rocky banks, deeper docks, more brush piles, things like that. And then there's this weird up lake, up the river area, where the water comes out of the bottom of the Ouachita Dam. And then when they generate, there's current. But the water down lake at the bottom is like 90 degrees. And when they generate and it comes out of Ouachita, deep, clear lake there,
right, right.
You know, it's in the upper 50s. Like Matt Stephan caught 2 bedding fish. Guys were catching post spawners on trick worms up there. But the general consensus, and I talked to a couple of these guys, you know, they can get information before the cutoff on this.
Right, right.
The general consensus among the big time guys on that is you can't catch enough fish up that river in the cooler water to be a factor to compete with the guys down. Like you'll catch like 1 or 2 rogues. Well, Hebert and Martin went up there and utilized the current and the flow and the cool water. And there were like, it was almost, I don't want to say it was like tidal, but it was almost, Scott Martin said there were short windows because when they started pulling current, he said there was a back current. He said then there was a current the other way, and then the water would drop to the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. He said, so you had drastic temperature swings, and when the water backed, he said it pulled the warm water up the river. So you had drastic temperature swings, water color changes, and 2 current changes every day. And then somewhere in there were a couple little windows based on when they started pulling water or, you know, releasing it into the lake to catch them. So that was kind of cool to see those guys do the off the wall stuff up there in the clean water. And then the schooling fish also played a little bit, not as much as guys were thinking.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, you had a chance to talk to Brian afterwards.
Yeah, we'll see how this audio turns out. There's like an ambient air conditioner noise.
It was backstage, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was after he got it. I mean, the cup's there and everything.
Yeah. All right. Let me see if I can get it queued up. All right. Here's Brian Thrift.
Here at Lake Hamilton, you know, it reminds me a lot of the lake I fish back home, Moss Lake. Me and Matt Airy fish it every week in night tournaments. And, you know, it's a small lake. Everybody knows where all the good stuff is. And it's a kind of a game of chess. Like, you got to see where people are fishing while you're fishing, try to get on stuff when it hasn't been fished for a while. And there's not much current on the lower end. So the more places you have, the better off you're going to be. And that's how I approach this event. I mean, it's very similar to my home lake. I ran a lot of places, and I had an area that was good also. But, you know, being able to make that one cast and run to the next piece of cover, make 2 or 3 casts, run to the next piece of cover, and then having a home that I could set the remainder of the day and try to catch a big one, you know, that was kind of the 1-2 punch I used. I knew I wanted to have, you know, enough brush piles I could run for 3 days. And I wanted to have a home where I could sit and milk out a bite if I had to have a bite. You know, if all else fails and I need to get a bite, I can go here, spend an hour, catch a couple fish. And I ended up, it worked perfectly, you know. I mean, I went to my home every day and culled a lot of the fish I caught off the brush. So just everything went according to plan. I think it's kind of heavy, but I couldn't tell it on stage. Like, that was my thoughts, like, after my when Forrest came up, you know, they handed me the check and the trophy. I'm like, man, am I going to be able to pick this thing up? Because I can remember the first tour event I won. I couldn't hardly lift a trophy over my head. I was so shaking and just excited. And then today I'm walking my fish up, my legs cramping, my sides cramping. And I'm thinking, there's no way if I win, I'm going to lift this cup over my head. But it's that's just like you zone out, you're good.
Hey, the trophy does look heavy, man.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's really heavy.
He one-handed it, too. Did he not one-hand it?
I think you're thinking of Peter T in 2007.
No. I remember that. I thought there was one shot.
I don't
shot
know. I went back down and was getting ready
what
for
What was
the
up with
conference.
The air conditioner?
I don't know. You could hear what he was saying. You got the gist of it.
It was funny, too, because you could see your reflection in the cup.
Yeah, I know. That's my claim to fame right there. It's just interesting after day two. So day one, I guess he caught, he said he caught, like 29 keepers and called through a 10-pound limit. But then day two, you know, you go back to the press conference from day two. He said, I'm not going to die on any one pattern. I'm just going to run around and fish and try to make the best of it, and hopefully I'll stumble into a few.
Stumble.
Just stumble into a few. But then he started off on that final day, and, I mean, he had the thing won in the first 20 minutes. He picked the top water up, and that was really the only substantial schooling bite that we saw play.
Can you remember the last tournament that was won exclusively on a topwater? Where topwater really, really came into play?
I mean, the Forestwood Cup that John Cox won, I mean, he caught a lot of his fish on a frog way up that creek on Wheeler, and then Michael Neal got second on schoolers almost exclusively on a topwater.
Yeah.
In FLW, that played there. But a real interesting top 10. A lot of big names in this tournament kind of struggled. If you look at it, you know, you had David Dudley, who finished in 40th. I thought Casey Scanlon was going to really shine in this thing with the Ozarks. Jeremy Lawyer, the other Ozark expert in the field, did have a top 10. Zach Burge came in 35th. I mean, if there's a guy who had nothing to lose, he just came in through the coast as, you know, kind of a free roll for him. Brad Knight, who had won on Ouachita in 2015, kind of knows that program and on how to get it done on that lake. I mean, there's got to be some good vibes there, too, knowing that you'd won on that tournament.
Jason Reyes?
Yeah, Jason Reyes. He finished 37th. Larry Nixon, probably a sneaky pre-tournament favorite. You know, he got a lot of help and a lot of history. And I mean, that's right up his alley. I don't know that he got a lot of help. I'm just assuming he's the general and, you know, like Mike Worms there. There's a bunch of guys that are around there that he's probably known for 30 years. It'd be like kind of fishing with their club. But, you know, 27th for Larry Nixon. He had 10-9 on the first day, 7-5 on the second day. John Cox finishing 23rd. I guess there wasn't anything he could go up miles and miles and miles to get away from everybody. But yeah, so you had Brian Thrift, and you had Kyle Walters in second, Dakota Ebear in third, Jeremy Lawyer in fourth, Scott Martin rounds out the top five, Austin Felix in sixth. Cool story there after double zeroing on Grand. Like, he never finished below 15th in the last four events of the season. Joseph Webster, who, it's interesting. I was talking to another angler on tour. This was like a month ago, and he's like, name the most underrated angler on tour right now. I said, Joseph Webster. And he goes, yes, not who I'm thinking of. I go, Austin Felix. And he goes, bingo. And those two finished sixth and seventh. And Ryan Salzman, he was the only angler who double qualified for the cup. He finished in eighth. Josh Douglas, the smallmouth wizard from Mille Lacs, came down from the Great White North to catch a few 90 degree water spotted bass at largemouth in ninth, and then Jordan Osborne in 10th. Probably one of the biggest surprises to me was Nick LeBrun, who he committed to the Whopper Plopper on day one, which is how a lot of guys thought this was going to be won going into it. Sneaky. And he caught 15 pounds on day one. He was second place. There were two 15 pound bags. He was only 3 ounces behind Thrift. And on day two, he only caught 2 for 3 pounds. Looked like he was throwing an old, now don't quote me on this, I'm just going based on what I saw.
Yeah.
Looked like he was throwing one of those old Smithwick Rogues. He went Jason Christie on him for 2 fish for 3 pounds on day two. But the whole tournament, Mark, there were 2 15-pound bags, like 2 14-pound bags, a 13-pound bag. And on the last day, the last day of the cup, what always happens, and Thrift mentioned this, what always happens on the last day of any championship event? There's 10 guys in it. What does one of them do? He goes off the chain.
Okay.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about classics and cups.
Yeah.
There's always some dude like, what did Clint Davis do? Ouachita, oh, it's freaking stingy. These guys have been out there for 7 days. Clint Davis, 18 pounds. Yeah. Give me the damn
cup. That's a good point.
And with Randy Howell and with Edwin Evers and with Jordan Lee twice and with, I mean, there's always someone who has a big bag.
Mm-hmm.
These are the weights.
On the final day.
On the final day on Hamilton. And
seven.
10-13, Brian Thrift. 7 pounds, 4 ounces, 7-11, 7 pounds even. A whopping 8-8, 7-13, 7-1, 4-14, 5-3, and 0.
Yeah. It's like Pittsburgh almost.
That's rough.
Not as bad as Pittsburgh, but
that's
really
tough.
Close.
I mean, the final day of the cup and you maintain your second place finish.
Yeah.
And you come in with 7 pounds. I mean, the limit was big. I've never heard so many guys talk about how much they learned about themselves and when it came to grinding and decision making. Now, it's interesting because there's two ways to grind. You had guys in the top 10 who fished 150 different brush piles over the course of the day and made one or two casts on each one. And you had other guys who just sat on two or three brush piles for the entire day.
Yeah.
Same result, completely different strategy to get the job done.
Yeah.
And there wasn't even a big fish weighed in, like 5 pounder.
Yeah.
And there's like 6s, 7s, 8s, 9s, 10s in that lake.
Not this time of the year?
I mean, they're still there. It's not like they're not in the lake anymore. But so when you look at those weights, you look at how it's done. Thrift went 15-3, 12-7, and 10-13.
Yeah.
Wins by a little over 5 pounds. He blew it out.
All right, I want to talk about something real quick as a result of Thrift winning the cup. Is this the year? Is this the year that the fans, the industry, even maybe the anglers would like to see a made-for-television or made-for-the-internet or whatever platform that you want to have it on where you have the Bassmaster Classic champion, the FLW Cup winner, and whoever wins the Red Crest compete, those three people compete against each other in either a one-day or a two-day shootout? Are we at the point where the fans would appreciate, the industry would accept it, and all three organizations would go, all right, not a bad idea. Let's see who's best of the best.
So you're talking Brian Thrift, Ott Defoe,
and whoever wins the Red Crest.
In what format?
I'm not really sure.
Got to be a hybrid format.
Maybe one day your best five, the next day, I don't know. I hadn't got to that point. The thought is, are we at the point?
Yeah, we've been at that point for the past 10 years with the FLW and Bass.
We didn't have this situation. Could that be a monumental event that would actually bring all three organizations together and forget about all the bitterness and anger and
well, it wouldn't cost that much to put on.
No.
And I think you could do a pay-per-view event where all three organizations split the revenue for it and kind of build it up like the Tiger Phil matchup that was on HBO.
I agree. All right. So why can't we get that done? What are some of the reasons? Well, I think the obvious everybody knows. I mean, there has been conflict between organizations. There have been conflict between the leadership. Can't we all just get in a room and try and make this happen? You got your superstar that's representing your championship. Let's get after it.
Now, here's the next question. Right now, is Brian Thrift unquestionably the best in the world?
Man, you know, we kind of got into that a little bit before the show, and it's a good argument. It really is. It's a very, very good argument. Who are you going to put up against him? Jacob Wheeler? Edwin Evers?
Now, how many Angler of the Years does Jacob Wheeler have?
That would be zero.
Thrift has like 8 wins, multiple Angler of the Years. Now he's got a cup.
How well
look
did
at
Wheeler,
his top 10 percentage is like 37%.
I
think he is.
Could be. Like I said, it's a great argument. And hence, that's another reason why I think this event would bring huge interest from the fans, from the industry, even from the anglers. Let's get these three guys together and let's make it happen. Go heads up, one-on-one-on-one. I guess that's what it would be.
You could
get after it.
You could make a case that right now in the world, three of the top five anglers in the world are on FLW.
Three of the top five. Brian Thrift.
Yep.
Scott Martin.
Yep.
And David Dudley.
Yeah.
All right. I have no notes, folks.
I don't think you could. You could argue it, but I don't think you could take away from any of the legitimacy of that statement. And if you want to go top seven
how about,
or eight.
How about top three? How about another top three off the MLF right now?
Right now it's Jacob Wheeler, obviously.
Yeah.
Edwin.
Who's the third?
I mean, if you just go off of the Red Crest points.
I'm not saying to do that, though. Who would be the number three guy over there? Off the top of your
Boy.
Head. I mean, I know you can't pull it up.
Off the top of my head?
I apologize.
Off the top of my head, I'll go A-Mark.
Yeah, he's got a win.
And solid.
Pretty solid.
Either that or Michael Neal. He made all four cups.
How about Jeff Sprague? You talk about Sprague all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's knocked it out of the park all year long.
And some of this is subjective, obviously. If you just want to go objective, you're going to look straight at the stats and the Red Crest points and the FLW Tour standings and stuff. But I think right now you got to put Scott and Brian. And even though Dudley sucked in this cup, like I said, the guys who finish at the bottom.
I agree.
I think you got three out of the five.
All right, what about on the pass side? Brandon Cobb?
Brandon Cobb's number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, two wins. He's smoking it.
Mm-hmm. Who else? Anybody else?
It's hard because you got those names seared into your brain. You got to go. I mean, how far back are you going to go?
Well,
because
just
if
this
you're,
year.
Well,
just
if
this
you're,
year.
Well, no, I'm looking at Thrift overall. I mean, right now, but also the body of the work.
No, I got it.
I mean, Clark Wendlandt. He's over there now. He hasn't set the world on fire, but he's having a solid year. He's got three FLW Tour Anglers of the Year.
He had his
decade. He's recently won FLW Tour event.
Yeah. He had his decade.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been since the turn of the century, but he's had his decade.
Cobb sticks out to me 100% there over there. Just
how cool would
solid.
That be to take the top three champions and put it out there? All right. Now, what do you think would happen if I pick up the phone and I call Bruce Aiken at Bass and say, hey, man, not that it matters.
I think he'd get a good chuckle out of it.
Probably. It's like, well, Ott's not part of our organization anymore.
What if Ott wins Red Crest? That'd make it easy. Just be a one-on-one.
Yeah. Who wins that? Ott versus Thrift.
I mean, you could put Ott in there as one of the top three, too. On MLF, look where he finished in the points. He didn't even have to fish the last event, and he's still qualified super easy. You look at the cups he made and the finishes that he had as the reigning Bassmaster Classic champ, coming off of wins on the Elite Series. Yeah. I might put Ott number three.
Look,
I would put Ott number three
on
MLF.
Let me ask you this. Should Major League Fishing be kind of the point organization to make this happen? And the only reason I say that is because they've got the Classic champ. Mm-hmm. And Odd Defoe.
No,
they're going to have the Red Crest. Game. Yeah. They're going to have the Red Crest guy, obviously.
Yeah.
So now all they got to do is get Brian Thrift to go, hey, man, we want to do this made for television.
I mean, you pay him enough, Thrift will
whatever.
Do
the fans want to see it? You know, what I'm getting on the instant feedback is, heck yeah. Would you want to see it?
Yeah, that would be interesting. I would watch it. I like I said, you got to do it up like the Tiger Phil deal.
Yeah. I mean, somebody said here, take the three championship winners and the top five in the points. No. That kind of waters
called,
it down.
That's called the TTBC.
Yeah. No, it's champion versus champion versus champion.
Yeah. I mean, the other stuff was just a subjective conversation that we were just throwing names out and saw who sticks just kind of in our heads who we would take. I know we had that, you know, we had the top five that you did a month ago. And I don't think any of that changes.
Hey, Jim in Indiana, I'm not going to post that. Please don't mention that anymore. He didn't say anything bad. I just there's a path that I don't want to go down.
Okay.
By mentioning
a certain don't go name, down it.
I'm not going down it. So, sorry about that, Jim. Yeah, I want to see it. All right, moving on. Next subject, we haven't had a chance to get your thoughts and my thoughts on the FLW schedule for 2020. That came out while you were gone and while I was gone. What are your thoughts on that? Do you need a second to pull it up on your phone?
Yeah, let me pull it up real quick.
I mean, they're kicking things off at Sam Rayburn toward the end of January.
Yeah, I like that. That's a great tournament. A lot of strategy in play there.
Then they're moving on to Florida to go to the Harris Chain once again in late February. Then they're off to Lake Martin in Alabama in March. Mm-hmm. Then Cherokee in April. Then another event in April at Hartwell. Then you have one of the best times of the year to go to Dardanelle
right
in the month of May, which that could just be lights out. And then you wrap up the season on the Detroit River.
It's great. We saw what they did at the Detroit River, setting every single record 2 years ago in the FLW Tour. And what stuck out to me when I originally saw this was there's those three tournaments in the middle that all kind of are very similar. Now, I know Lake Martin can fish a little bit different, especially earlier that year. We saw the Elite Series there. Muddy Water can come into play. That could still be kind of winter patterns. But you get Martin, Cherokee, and Hartwell back to back to back all in the early part of the year. Your East Tennessee, North Alabama, Carolinas guys are going to be licking their chops on all three of those.
Yeah.
You're going to see guys who will be able to power fish and finesse fish the majority of this schedule. And I'm even going to go so far as to say Sam Rayburn. You know, Scott Martin, he mentioned in his press conference, caught a 10-pounder on a spinning rod on Sam Rayburn in January. Lake Martin, that's going to be a lot of spinning rod, but you could also power fish for the largemouth. Same thing at Cherokee. You know, there was a lot of power cranking up the rivers, but Andrew Upshaw won on the Ned Rig finesse spinning rod. Lake Hartwell, you're going to be able to target those docks for pre-spawn fish. There's going to be able to power fish the blueback herring spawn. There's going to be some fish on beds there. Dardanelle having a really nice resurgence. You know, the grass is coming back. They're catching good 20-plus pound bags there. It's probably going to be really healthy last year because it's been high the majority of this year. There's sections of that lake that no one can get on with a boat. And then the Detroit River keeps getting better and better as more and more of those jumbo gobies get into the lake from Erie. So not as eye-popping as this past year's schedule, but I was talking to one of the guys at the Cup, and I was like, well, I mean, you guys had the schedule this year. Remember, we were going into it. It was like, geez, this will take 80 pounds to win every single event this year. And it darn near did.
Yeah.
It's just kind of ironic. They have the biggest power schedule in the history of the FLW Tour. And then it's like, outside of the Three Rivers Cup, it's like the toughest, lowest weight cup that there's been, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just giant, 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 and 12-inch spots.
Yeah. So, it doesn't have a whole lot of flash to it. Mm-hmm.
And no cup announcement for next year.
Yeah, but it's functional.
Yeah, it's a solid schedule.
Yeah.
It's got some of the standard standbys in it. I mean, there's nothing where you look at it and go, ooh.
Which stop intrigues you the most?
It's easy
for me.
The Dardanelle.
Yeah.
The Dardanelle stop intrigues me. It's been a little while since we've seen an event there, and there's a lot of stuff you can do on that lake. It could turn into a grind. I mean, we didn't really get to see a true Dardanelle tournament when Steve Kennedy won the Elite Series the last time they were there because, you know, the water was really high. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on. He got into that kind of backwater shale pit and caught him in there. But you get a real true Dardanelle and normal pool in May, you're going to be able to see a frog play. You're going to see offshore brush piles. You might see, I think the shad spawn might be going on then. You're going to see a big worm, a crankbait.
And then the rain always has an impact on what goes down above Dardanelle on the Arkansas River. I mean, if that stuff happens next year what happened this year, they'll be looking for another
place
to have.
And think about it. Castledine, I mean, there's still some really good Rayburn guys. And Rayburn, they kind of got screwed on Rayburn this year because it was 8 feet high.
Yeah.
You hit Rayburn at the end of January, and if it's primed, look out.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
110, 120 pounds might win that. I mean, Albert Collins is still weighing in 40-pound bags on a weekly basis, it seems like, over there.
Yeah. I just got a text from Jeff Creed. He has not had his procedure done yet. It actually takes place this week, so we'll keep everybody posted.
Neck, right?
Back, neck, neck something. Back. I'm not really sure. All right, hopefully. I thought it was actually last week, but he just texted me and said he's going to get it done this week, so... Good stuff. All right, last thing I want to say, and then we will get out of here. I want to get your thoughts on this, Matthew. I was thinking when I was watching the weigh-in, can you recall anybody in any big event, be it the Cup, be it the Classic, be it whatever, where they're emotional, they're excited, they don't win, but they're kind of in the middle of the pack on the final day, and they just... kind of direct people toward a specific social media or their website or their YouTube channel or whatever. Just say, hey, I want to make sure that I don't mention that I don't miss out on any of the sponsors. So what I'd like for you guys to do is go to such and such. I don't want to waste anybody's time up here. Has anybody ever done that?
I don't know, but I screwed up.
What do you mean?
Totally was going to have you play Jeremy Lawyer's post weigh-in speech on the show. It was the greatest professional angler post weigh-in
speech. That's why I brought this up.
In the history of professional bass fishing, dating back to Jimmy Houston, Roland Martin, all of them.
It was pretty funny.
It surpassed all of them. It was like that guy.
That's what got me thinking about this.
I wanted to run it. It's the greatest, and it's on there. I'm sure the weigh-in replay was, yeah. And I meant to tell you to cue that up. It is just 3 minutes of high-octane sponsor plugs and pure adrenaline.
It was rapid fire, man.
I mean...
just boom, 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 boom,
and here's what surprised me. So, you know, I did FLW Live in the studio, and Jeremy Lawyer won on Grand Lake.
Yeah.
Mellow, calm. I mean, he's a Midwest dude. He's kind of, you know, kind
of
country
of the city that he's,
you know, but he's that kind of country. He's got that kind of, he's a Ozark guy.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, he got up there after that. And he looked around and saw all those people and just boom. it was impressive.
But when you hear, now granted, it was very charismatic.
We're not making fun of him.
No, no way. What I'm saying
is... he was jacked up.
But you have guys do it over and over and over. And I was just thinking, can you recall anybody doing it different?
Yeah, Scott Martin.
What did he do?
Well, not here, just as a whole. You know, Scott Martin always...
what?
Well...
what?
He always pumps his social media.
I'm talking about instead of going through looking at the jersey going, hey, I don't want to leave anybody out.
Yeah, I mean, you'll hear guys folks. Just go, yeah, you know, you see all the people on my jersey, I ain't going to name them, but they're the ones who support me, so go check them out. A lot of guys say that.
It would be kind of cool to somebody have a video just queued up and go, folks, you know, I've waited for this moment all of my life. All right. There's a lot of people that I want to thank. There's a couple of people that I want to thank now. But I've actually put a video together. And I want you to go watch it on my YouTube channel. Blah, 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 blah.
There you go.
Just something like that. I don't think anybody's ever done that.
Is that what you were bringing up, though, about the Jeremy Lawyer?
Yeah. I thought it rocked, man. It was
funny. We were standing awesome. There, and it gets in a minute, and it's like, boy, this guy had it really
it
thought
just
out.
Going and going and going and going.
Then it
going
gets in 2 minutes, and it's like, this guy is jacked up. And then about 3 minutes, you know, there's like people who just randomly started standing up and clapping in the audience. It got so impressive. He was like a mix between an auctioneer, a car salesman, and a professional angler. That's what I said. I was sold by the end of it.
It was good, man. It was really good. All right, so no announcement where it is next year. Obviously, we talked about the schedule. I don't know, man. It's whoever's going to cut the check. I really think so. Whatever community's going to write the check and want them to come to their area. I will say this about the venue that they have there. I mean, I was there last year. It's a great venue.
Yeah, super easy. Everything's contained.
The hotel's right
there,
the convention center where they have the weigh-in and the show. It's just...
great attendance on day two and obviously sold out on day three.
Yeah. But it's the perfect size arena for that.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, if you could take that arena and package that arena and drag it across the nation.
Great fishing arena.
It would be. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. A great weigh-in arena.
Because the stands don't go 360. You know, it stops, so there's no one really behind it. You got a good screen, and it's, you know, it gets loud there at the end.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff, Matthew. We're going to come back tomorrow. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, great two guests. Over the next couple of days, we're going to have Wesley Strader on tomorrow and then Jacob Reeler on Wednesday. Any final thoughts about your time that you spent in Arkansas at the Cup?
No, this FLW does a great job taking care of the media, making it easy for everyone. It was a really functional outdoor show. The booths were busy, but it wasn't like the classic where you couldn't even move and got claustrophobic. You could actually move around. There were a ton of the FLW pros, so some MLF pros that were there, you know, with working with their sponsors, walking around on that. No Elite Series pros because they were all headed up to Waddington getting ready to start practice. But overall, a great experience, and it's about time that Brian Thrift got his cup.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's the only one who didn't think he was going to win one.
That's crazy. Crazy. All right, everybody. Great stuff today here on a Monday. Back tomorrow with Wesley Strader, Wheeler on Wednesday. Everybody be safe. We're out of here.